So today we're going to speak to you about this this kind of any movement. So we're going to talk to you about Grenoble, not just Grenoble, but what we call the hinterland, after the geographer William Cronin, the southern industrial hinterland of Grenoble. It's a field site that's part of a project called Sensibilia, which is a ANR project that has both the Laboratoire Cresson and PACT. The project's built around two intuitions, two hypotheses, to say it in a more scientific way. That firstly, that an approach by the senses, by all of the kind of proliferating experimentations that's been going on in anthropology and sensory studies, all of the things that we've been hearing the last this last week, is a particularly fertile ground to understand the transformation of our relations with the milieu. And in a way, within that intuition, there's a sense that the multiple crises that we face in this time that we've started calling the Anthropocene or the Capitalocene or the Symbiocene that Audrey talked about yesterday, a bit more hopefully, is also a crisis or crises in sensibility. We've been exploring those things. Crises in sensibility, in kind of sensory imaginaries, and also of what Donna Haraway calls responsibility. All of these three different ways of kind of figuring that sense of our relationship with a changing world, or a changing relationship with a changing world. Second intuition, that in a way these huge questions that are traversing us at the moment, the best way, maybe the best or most productive way to address these is not at a kind of global level, but is really through an attention to the local, to the territory, to the terrain. And in a way, that's one of the things that also kind of unites everyone that's here, that's this kind of attention to particular places, that it's not just a question of a place or the sensory in the kind of global sense, but how particular points of view, how particular ways of inhabiting a place, not just as a singular place, but as a plurality of ways of inhabiting a place. And in this project, we have a number of common or collective field sites, field works, and this is one of them. So this is a kind of collective field site that's kind of brought together by Sébastien's interest in an approach based on listening to the territory. My interest at the moment on the question of air and atmosphere, and Lais by an approach looking at sonic or sonorous imaginaries. And in a way, we've all sort of gravitated around this field. So this is a kind of a brief portrait of this collective field site. And we're talking about it this morning, and we're going to have an installation this afternoon called Les Sirènes du Trac. So this is the field site. This is Grenoble. This is a map that Sébastien made. Curated, or I don't know, from QGIS, which I like because what it shows in kind of quite an odd way is this, what Nicolas talks about kind of at the heart of the metropolitan ecology that is Grenoble, which is the question of le pente, la pente, la plaine et l'eau, the slope, valley, or really the valley floor, and water. And here we see in this kind of big mass of the Belle Donne, the two big catchment areas that drain into the Trac, which is where, firstly, we see Grenoble that's got two big rivers going through it, Isère and the Trac. And what we're interested, our field site is really in the bottom, in the southern sort of hinterlands of Grenoble. And what interests is this relationship really with the river, with water, and that you can read the whole history of not only Grenoble but the whole region through its relationship with water, its kind of ambivalent relationship with water. This is our field site in greater detail, where we're starting to get some of the infrastructures that have been built around this this river. So to give you a very brief history, Grenoble is a city that's been swept by floods all through its history. This is a famous poem by someone called Blanc la Goutte from the 18th century. And it made me think of Giuseppe's Égotiste de Grenoble. Maybe it was Blanc la Goutte. But it's this amazing poem written in patois, Grenoblois malheureux, where he talks about all sorts of different the return of wolves, fires, social unrest, series of kind of crises that Grenoble has been going through, but in particular also the seasonal floods. So the first part is a really beautiful description of how the track every spring fills with the melting snow from its huge catchment area, and it overflows the bounds that have been the banks that the inhabitants have been trying to kind of contain it in. And then the second one is this big event, which is this huge flood that happened in 1737, which completely inundated the plain. This time it wasn't the Drac, le Dragon, it was the Isère, le Serpent, in September, which burst its bank and stopped the Drac from flowing, and it created, Grenoble became a sea. And yeah, I'll let you read a few little parts. So it's really through this kind of imaginary of risk and danger is something that we find again and again in Grenoble's relationship to water. But it's not just a question of risk. From very early on, people have been using the water for both as a resource, a kind of primary material for processes, but also as a force motrice, as a way of powering machines. And this is the plans for an infrastructure that has really sort of Sébastien and I have become a little bit obsessed with, which is called the Canal d'arrosage de la Romanche, the canal of the irrigation canal of the Romanche, which was started by a group of notables from Grenoble, among them the mayor of the town at the time, who were big landowners to the south of Grenoble. And they had seen that there's a big difference between the two waters, between La Romanche and the Drac. They've got two completely different catchment areas. One brings a fertile soil, brings fertile silts and sediments. The other one sweeps them away. The Drac is one that... So the Drac is the river that kind of has the upper hand between the two. And the whole sort of southern hinterland of Grenoble was either galets, rocks, river, kind of riverbed rocks, or wetlands. It was a wasteland in the original sense of the term, uncultivatable land. And these had this plan to bring the water of the Romanche from before the confluence and bring it to this area to the south of Grenoble. And this is their plans. What I really like in it is this sort of sense of a almost like a vascular system of these veins kind of reaching out into the land and bringing. So their plan was build this canal, let the water come with its sediments, and over time the land will be transformed from worthless land to valuable land. And they got a petition from the king, they got Trois de Seigneur to buy the lands and to build the canal. It was actually built during the reign of Napoleon. And one of the wonderful things is that it's still going, this canal. There's still a company and it still pays dividends, which is a very strange thing. It's kind of a kind of image of kind of speculative infrastructure. And over the 19th century, this this canal grew. This is a military map from, in the 1920s, and we can see some of the infrastructure, kind of the blue lines there. In fact, the whole of the south of Grenoble, all the way to the Isère and all the way to the Trac, was full of this network, and very quickly became not a question. I'm talking about this too much. Okay, I'm going to talk about it for half an hour. But basically, it went from irrigation to force motrice to a question of energy, powering water mills. And actually, the whole of Grenoble, the whole of the industry of Grenoble, so this is minoterie, flour mills, wood mills, plaster making, cement making, glove making, hemp, cloth making, were all connected to this energy infrastructure, which predates the kind of electrical grid by a century and a half. And it went all the way to kind of the middle of Grenoble. Even there was a roller coaster, there was a fairground that was powered by this canal. And with the invention of the hydroelectric turbine in Grenoble, heavy industry installed itself. So it turned, so water became not just a force motrice, but got turned into electricity. And this electricity powered a kind of second industrial revolution in France. And this is just up from our field site in the lower valley of the Romanche, which was known as La Vallée de la Mort Lente, because it was just filled with a kind of bluey-grey smoke all the time. And each factory had its own hydroelectric plant. Electricity was a local thing. Also in Grenoble, we have Desprez, who was an engineer, who was the first person, one of the first people to demonstrate the transport of electricity from Jarry, which is in our field site, just there, just by the confluence. He used the existing telegraph lines to bring electricity to Grenoble, and he created this sort of expo with this kind of pump that created this water fountain. It was a whole kind of show, and people would follow in taxis, when carriages, from the expo, which is at Les Halles now, all the way to Jarry, following the line, and people were completely fascinated by this movement of energy. And then, in the 40s, it kind of, the production of electricity and industrial production kind of parted, were decoupled, and EDF took over all of these production of electricity. This is a map from, I think, from the 30s, around already all the kind of barrages that were put in place just in a small section of river. And now there's four huge barrages, 15 hydroelectric plants in this catchment area, as well as the second story is one of chemistry. So in the First World War, the Ministry of Defence called for suppliers of chlorine gas for the war effort. And in Grenoble, there were two engineer entrepreneurs that started producing chlorine, and it was linked with the Chemin de Fer to the front. And that chlorine production after the war turned into the whole of kind of synthetic chemistry based around chlorine. And these are two of the biggest chemical platforms in France doing this kind of chemistry. And what is, in a way, what intrigues us so much about this space, which is, well, this territory, which is, you know, this is the scale. This is 2 kilometres. We're in a very small space. You've got two huge chemical platforms. You've got electricity production. You've got electricity distribution. You've got the city in a kind of dense form that arises from the north there in Pontclair. Then you've got more kind of suburban Vars and Vif. You've also got agriculture. You've also got, can't really see here, you've got the captage d'eau, the water for the whole of, which produces something like 80% of the water for Grenoble. You've also got a nature reserve along the track. What else have we got there? We've also got the military with their champ de tir just above. you've got a mosaic of neighbouring activities in a very, very small space. So in a way, it kind of it presents again all the questions of how do we live together? That question of conviviality, in a way, of between all these different not just human activities, but of kind of more than much more than human activities that make a territory.
Let's
go.
We will go for a few minutes of listening. It's just all what you will be hearing. It's sounds that comes from the field work, so just field recordings. We will go through multiple places that are melting because I just try to make you listen to the different ambiences. And okay, so we go.
Ah oui, le texte.
Ah oui.
Je te dis quand ça arrive.
Mais quand on est passé, moi, c'est les gens
qui ont habité. Ah oui, c'est vrai, il y a plein de gens qui... Alors, il y en a qui sont réticents,
je vous dis. Alors, moi, je ne suis pas qualifiée. C'est psychologique en
même
temps, mais c'est vrai, mais là...
Alors, je vais vous expliquer un truc. Je ne répéterai à personne. Si ça sort d'ici, je crois que c'est
vous.
Ici, là, c'était tous des anciens qui avaient... Là, ils ont acheté, là, c'est son père à elle. C'est tous des gens qui avaient... Ça, c'était des gens que nous, on a acheté après. Eh bien, c'est tous des gens qui se sont fait très vieux. Très vieux.
Oui.
Donc, ça, le courant, à mon avis...
Ça dépend. Vous mettez des vaches dans un pré, elles donnent deux fois moins de lait quand vous allez les pilotes.
C'est vérifié, ça?
Oui, bien sûr. Ah oui, c'est vérifié.
Moi, j'ai des abeilles, pas loin, hein, sur un côté.
De fait.
Ben, ah. Elles marchent mieux ici qu'à l'autre entrée, elles.
Oui, ben, ça dépend. Bon, pourtant, quand elles, ça marche.
Hein. Ouais, ici, ça marche mieux.
Vaste étendue de terre à l'horizon avec un panorama sur Bendon, une odeur constante de barbecue dès que le beau jour pointe leur nez, un nombre important de mètres carrés de potager, un poulailler, un cerisier, des chiens et des criquets, et puis en toile de fond, un champ électrique à perte de vue et des grésillements. De quoi mettre mal à l'aise ceux pour qui cette sonorité n'est pas la leur, mais qui caractérise très bien la musique de chez nous.
c'est allumé ou pas?
Ouais.
Turn. Voilà, 5 minutes.
Ah ouais.
So in this situation, we've been talking about here, the work of sonic imaginary focuses on the interest of reactivating the sound landscape of a place with anthropic tendencies in order to better understand the representation of the sound. Starting from the premise that sonic perception shapes your reception of the world just as much as it allows to reconstruct the environment that surrounds us, the focus was to understand the perception of the sound in combination with the everyday expertise of inhabitants. The idea was not only to identify but also to characterize the soundscape, to know which elements make sense to them and where these elements take them. The experience of this exercise approached the soundscape as sort of a sonography, trying to reconstitute sound image of a place where we collect sonorities. So this work attempt to develop a method enabling inhabitants to immerse themselves in the sound environment and by this familiarization to bring out its sonorities. So the sound derived is a commented work, which is a methodology of working of talking in three cycles that expose the sound in three stages. It's aimed to capture both the voluntary sound narrative and the atmosphere surrounding it. This is why the world derive is occurred. The first two times is done with the zoom and a headset that the volunteer can manipulate. The last time the derive is done without any material to be entered by the volunteer. So there are two itineraries, one in Pontclair and the other one in Vass. But I'll be talking about the derive in Pontclair. The first time is mostly a discovery. It's more for them to take the grip because it's kind of overwhelming to hear so much sound and so query for them. We talk about sound like, do you hear the sound twist was doing tululu to bzz? It's more like really a discovery. The second time is where we discuss the soundscape together. We make a lot of assimilations. They tend to qualify the sound to search for a difference between one sound, what source of sound. On the first and last time, certain sound in particular stand up or provoke discourse because of the repetitions. So they try to remember to bring out their memory and moral here. So the sonority is what emerged from the transformation of the listening experience through the three cycles of a song, compared with interview, comment, city work, and archive. So that's one of the sonority. So very briefly, this track is intriguing to study through the prints of the sonic imagination. To say that it sounds the same one that of the power line, which is linked to a question of energy loss from the power lines themselves, is interpreted in a different way according to the individual who receives it. We could talk of a moral here that is the individual place of them. This method makes it possible to analyze what kind of resonance of sound echoes in a place and make it possible to talk about it, question of neighborhood by constituting a pictorial sound from which a focal point can emerge in order to discuss the imprint of a large infrastructure.
Okay, we don't have so much time, but I wanted to go to give some examples of how we can understand this territory when we approach it through listening. I just wanted to talk about a few forms of spatiality of a neighborhood, in particular with the chemical plants, that we might link to forms of listening. We can understand it in form of proximity and distanciation. For example, here we might not see very well, but we have a row of this kind of buildings all along the chemical plant in Pontclair. So here people live just in front of this industry. And talking with inhabitants, said they relate an attention to ordinary traces of the plant, the arrival of the train, the different smells, etc. But the risk here seems not to be a big problem, as it is accepted in a way, and there is a trust in the authorities, the capacity to control, and etc. Because most people live here for economical reason, and there is not so much organization or a commitment regarding to this plant. But if we go on the, how do you say?
Slope,
yeah. There is, well, this is not in the city of Clay, but there is there is a city that is on the slope. So we there we can see the plant is very more perceptible and audible. And here we can find different forms of commitment from people who are disturbed by the noise of the plant. And we have different form of organization. So I just might think that this reveals different form of listening, of or to pay attention to the presence of these plants. Okay, it's we are done. But yeah, this is another example of Jarry in the more in the south, and I think we can understand this as a large. What is called a large technical system, when you have this very big infrastructure and electric infrastructure, and we usually say that it's something that is hidden from the city, but here it's like people is living in this behind this very large infrastructure, and how do they
comment tu dis insensibilisation,
become numb, yeah, they become habituated, used to this presence of electric infrastructure, and very attached also to the presence of the plants. Okay, the last thing was about the sirens, but maybe we just continue the discussion this afternoon, because we have the installation about the sirens and what is the geography that is revealed through this presence. So it's very, very quick for the end.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Great work. How many minutes we have between the two bears?
We can have some two.
Okay, maybe you could hear the... Thank you very much. If there is no comments, I wanted to say that... because I was living in Grenoble and I spent a lot of time, so it's very, very interesting that the way you listen and you make me listen again to the place where I was living. And thank you very much for that. Paul, you want to say something? Yeah.
Have you some comments about the connect between the two valleys of Grésivaudan and Romanche? Because I think the water is taking to bring to ST microelectronic industry, yeah. And this is a kind of a controversy about it. So have you?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
On this territory, we have also all the water that is. Toute l'eau potable qui alimente la ville de Grenoble, elle est prise ici. All the water comes from this part of the territory.
From the south.
Yeah, and also, indeed, as Paul said, we have a big industry of ST Microelectronics.
At the top of the valley going up.
Yeah, and they need a lot of water, so they take it from here in the red thing. So there is a conflict also that might arrive. For now, not just few people that are yes.
May I have a question? Because actually we say that the Y, the Grenoble Y, the slope is from the top to the down, the slope of the natural slope of the river.
From the south.
From the south north. To the north.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what there is, I mean, there's the rivers, but there's also the rivers that flow underneath the ground.
Yeah.
And in a way, that's where a lot of the politics plays out, because the more water, so you've got in this tiny little space, you've got two chemical plants with 100 years and more of polluting the soil with heavy metals, especially mercury, huge amounts of mercury in the soil, but also loads of derivatives of chlorine perchlorates, perfluorochlorates, these things, PCBs, that stay a long, long time in the soil and in the water. And the nappe phréatique, the underground water flows south, and the problem is there's a question of managing the pressure, because it flows down from high pressure to lower pressure, and when they take a lot of water for the captage d'eau, it creates a kind of artificial slope, and you have problems of leakage between them. There's when you look at the maps, actually, on we'll see it later, you have these things, a banache, a kind of flume of pollution from these two chemical plants that passes in a tiny little space between the slope and the river. Tiny little space is where all the pollution goes, and it's literally 200 meters from where the wells are for the drinking water of the whole metropole. And then you see the kind of the enjeu, the challenge there, definitely in terms of challenge, in how and how politics is done through these socio-technical, these large infrastructural projects, in a way, and how they're, but also how they're not they're not mise en politique. They're not, sorry.
Thank you very much.